Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Here we go again, and this is going to be our last one of pulling a card. Because we're both being pulled towards the idea of going for omens and messages directly rather than going for this. But I'm the one who got to pull the final card because I've got the Rider-Waite tarot pack, and I'm identified it miscorrectly because I'm dyscalculate. So we've been looking at the wrong one. But even so, the message, it was the Seven of Swords, I thought. But it was actually the Six of Swords, which is an image in the traditional one of a ferryman ferrying away a wrapped up woman and a child with the swords down in the boat. And the significance of it is about moving away from problems, waking up, doing something that's more constructive. So that, I think we can probably fit that around to moving on.
Absolutely.
But it's also sort of significant at the moment because the reversed version of it is about stasis, not moving away from difficulties, no journey or removal of problems. And I think you should always look at both aspects of it, no matter how you pulled it, a card. Whether it's reversed or not. I don't know if you ever reverse cards, you may not.
No, I don't typically. I mean, I do. I guess I do pay attention to which way up they are. But they don't necessarily, reverse doesn't necessarily mean doom or gloom to me.
No, I understand that. No, fair enough. But this is really significant because this broadcast will be going out once a load of the lockdown stuff has been lifted. That's my mobile going off in the distance.
Oh, is it?
Say Dr. Priest, yeah.
<I'm> superb.
Which will be ignored. And we're coming out of these lockdown situations and everybody's sort of going, oh, we can move forward now. We can think about holidays. We can do this. We can do that. And I think the message of this card actually is, have you learned anything? What have we learnt? I mean, people have been talking a lot about how we've reconnected with nature. Sometimes some of us have. But what have we learnt from this? What is going on? What have we got to learn? And we've been talking about this the whole time, which is, it's about the disconnect, isn't it? The connect and the disconnect. And now we've got this thing about vaccination passports. What about those who can't have the vaccine because their immune systems aren't strong enough or they've had anaphylactic shock? It puts it back into a hierarchy, which is what we were talking about last time. And I think a lot of people were saying, oh, we're all in the same boat. And other people were saying, no, we're in the same storm. But it's made it clear that we're in very different boats.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's a very valid thing. What we have to learn is the storm is the storm.
But we are in very different boats.
And that we have to look at this. Whether we will, I don't know.
Yeah. Interestingly, for me,
yes,
that card was it, when I first saw it. It's an invitation, which confirms that the work. Because obviously, I'm a naughty girl and looked at a card before we zoomed, and but my card said the very, very, very same thing, which was that it's time to get away from the cards and connect directly with the land as speaking on behalf of the gods. So you know, to go back to the temple of the. Of the serpent, if you like, you know, that become the Pythia, become those ones who are speaking directly with the gods, receiving their wisdom directly from the mouth of she who knows.
Now. Which is why I study Kabbalah, which is about receiving now.
Yeah. And that even an oracle deck, useful and amazing as they are, even the runes, even the oems, unless you're using the actual trees, are a thing in a way that we allow to get between us and a sentient world.
Yes. And we put them in a hierarchy. Some of the cards are good, some of the cards are bad.
Yeah. Well, kind of. Yeah.
In a funny kind of way. You know, oh, no, this one's reversed. Oh, doom and gloom. Oh, you aren't moving on. And we've set them in stone as well. So as you were saying last time, an omen, what does it mean today?
Yeah. Totally.
What's it about today?
And don't let a thing get between you and the idea that the land might be speaking to you. No, we're not the idea, the fact that the land is speaking to you and that all your friends and relations out there in the world are part of an alive, sentient, ensouled web of interconnectivity.
And to quote this amazing teacher I know, called Mrs. Crockford.
what she said now.
Well, the thing about we have to act as if we trusted spirit.
Yeah, totally.
And a perfect example of that, the last time we met, which was quite a while ago, I still remember it because it was fairly profound. Something I said to you, do you think that lovely beech tree over there is willing to be our guardian?
Mm-hmm.
Because I was coming from the hopefully relatively humble beginning to understand land and nature and how this works in the whole spiritual thing, to say, do you think it would be all right for me to ask the tree if it would be our guardian? Whereas you just sort of said, I think it already is. So you could easily say the hierarchy there was I was the beginner and you were the expert, but it didn't feel like that.
No.
And that's how it is meant to be. It's not meant to feel like one is superior to the other. We're all where we are.
Well, also, those are only two opinions.
Yes.
You know, well, a question.
You mean
and
you
an
weren't
opinion.
Telling the truth?
Well, that's...
Have I been looking at that tree as my guardian all year? And you were just having an opinion? Oh, no! I'll chop it down immediately.
Oh, God. No. Oh, there's been so much of that. It's so painful
to
watch.
I was walking the hounds yesterday. And the people down the road are making a great water area. They're siphoning off. The streams are destroying the road. As the water temple rises up, there are streams running down either side of the road. And they've made a pool for wildlife.
Nice.
Which is lovely. It's got geese on it and it's got ducks on it already. And now I've forgotten what I was going to say. Oh, bugger.
Well, never mind, because it reminds me about our pond.
Oh, good.
Which isn't our pond at all. It's a pond down the road that belongs to my neighbour. And it's so exciting. So at first, it's a pretty huge pond.
Ours is a huge one.
It's not just your garden pond.
It's a miniature lake. Yes.
It's a miniature lake. Yeah. And it was there initially for a particular purpose, which it, I don't think, fulfils. But anyway.
It was a chocolate. Sorry, interrupting you. I was horrified they chopped down a tree.
Yes.
And I looked at it and I grieved. I really did grieve. But then I thought, pool's nice for the ducks. So maybe they paid, you know. I don't know.
I know. Well, there's appropriateness and not, isn't there? And
anyway, go on. Yeah. I interrupted you.
I guess we didn't know if it was, you know, was it an ash? Did it have dieback? Is that even the right thing to do? I think not. But no. I might be in a minority of one.
Yeah. I don't know either.
No. Anyway, so said massive pond had absolutely bucket loads of frog spawn. I was so excited because last year there didn't seem to be any.
Mm, I didn't see much last year.
Well, anyway, it turns out maybe I just didn't look in time last year because this year there was bucket loads of frog spawn and then there was a plump old heron and a couple of ducks and then there was not much frog spawn at all. And then there was really hardly any frog spawn at all. And I just thought, oh no. So, you know, it was a heaven seeing the heron and having ducks and all that, but what a shame about the frogs. Anyway, I went back there yesterday and there's loads of tadpoles. So even though there is hardly any frog spawn, it's managed to make loads of tadpole, who I imagine their numbers will be decimated still by the herons and the ducks, and maybe there'll be a frog at the end of it.
Yeah.
But it was so exciting and such a, I always find things like that are such a lesson in, for a start, not getting attached to any form of judgment around what you think is right or wrong. I mean, likewise with cutting down a tree, you know, there might have been a really, really, really good reason why that tree needed to be cut down. And maybe the tree was honoured and blessed in its potential death. Maybe it won't kill it. Perhaps it'll reshoot.
Yep.
Maybe it was incredibly important. Perhaps the wood will be, you know, treated as utterly sacred bounty and something wonderful will be done with it, etc. We don't know. But and in a way, although it's a typical Susie statement, isn't it, this is true and so is its absolute opposite, and it's true and it's also total rubbish to say that in many ways why we do something is sometimes maybe even always more important than what we're actually doing. And more than that, the attitude in which we do something, the spirit with which we do something, might matter more
yes.
than what we're actually doing.
Yes.
And so, you know, maybe that tree was going to fall on someone's house.
Yeah.
And maybe it's more important that the house stands than that the tree stands. And if it was done in a sacred manner and the, you know, the spirit of the tree was spoken to and asked to please leave there and go and be somewhere else and, you know, yada, 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 that would be such a different day than the one where someone just goes, oh, that's a nice bit of firewood and hacks it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even that's in the way.
Yeah. And, you know, well, two things as ever. Firstly, I believe this comes from your lot. Let he or she who is without sin cast the first stone, you know.
Yes.
I burn logs.
Yeah.
I do buy them from a tree surgeon who, therefore, they are being cut down within the parameters of the health, the good health of the forest. Remaining long-living tree. And I don't think he often cuts down a whole tree unless it's dead. So most of our firewood's very small. Because it tends to be, you know, well, the limb
branches,
was poking out and hitting cars or whatever. Well, anyway, that's a bit beside the point.
I took some of the branches off our apple tree because they were poking my eye out every time I went to the vegetable patch. So I said very politely, I'm really sorry, but I don't want to go blind.
No.
And I'm warning you now, I'm going to take these two branches off. And anyway, it might do you a bit of good to be pollarded a bit because you're a bit old and a bit rangy and a bit straggly. And since I've started loving you and feeding you and talking to you, you've started producing apples. So let's see if pulling you back a bit will help you produce more apples if you want to.
And there are, you know, there are in Robin Wall Kimmerer's beautiful, beautiful
Braiding Sweetgrass,
which is a book I never have a copy of because I keep giving it away. She talks about the way in which sweetgrass only thrives within reciprocity with humans. If you don't keep cutting it, it doesn't keep growing.
Yes.
And so, you know, there definitely are things
that are in relationship with us.
Totally.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if you typically, if you go to your apple tree and take, if let's say there are five apples in one clump, you might want to take three of those apples off so that you get big, plump, juicy, decent-sized, really healthy apples rather than five ickle ones.
Yes.
So it's not, you know, us interfering isn't always a bad thing.
No, absolutely not. But it's, again, it's intention. Everything is all about intention.
It really is.
Yeah.
What were we talking about in the first place?
I think we were talking, the Six of Swords?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was just really aware that I've started on about four different threads and not finished any of them.
No, I know, I know. And I don't mind that because this is a wonderful conversation. And I have his notebook next to me and every now and then I try and remember to jot something down when it comes up. And then I forget about it and you've gone off the line and I've gone, oh, damn, I didn't talk to him about that. And I make a note for next time and then I forget about it. But still, that's what conversations are about.
That's true. And in fact, I was speaking to my goddaughter on the phone yesterday and she reckons that the best bits of any podcast and when they completely derail themselves and start wittering and just are having a chat rather than trying to stick the subject and have an intelligent discussion. Yeah. And, well, dear listener, I hope that's true for you.
Yeah. One of the things I really value about this and also about the weekly discussions I have with my bish in London is I'm always learning. Always coming out of it learning a little bit more and I learn because I say something stupid or I say something in words and even as I hear them tumbling out of my mouth I think, I didn't mean to say it quite like that.
Yeah.
But until you're in a conversation when somebody you trust that you can say these things and debate them and bring them out and,
absolutely.
And get and, somewhere.
And I think that's a massive thing and I think that's back to orality and writing.
Mm.
I know I'm not alone in sometimes I will say something and I'm trying it out.
Yes, exactly.
It's been rattling around in my brain and now I'm seeing what it sounds like when I say it out loud. And sometimes you say it out loud and just go, well, that's bollocks.
Yes,
but it made perfect sense in your head.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
I mean, my children laugh at me all the time because I do love a good conspiracy theory. And
do you?
Oh, yeah. To a degree. Ah. I mean, I don't actually... It's funny, I really enjoy them, but I don't subscribe to almost any of them.
Because you're not at the starting point that they started at. That's the thing about a conspiracy theory. It makes sense if you start from the same point as the person...
Yeah, okay.
If you're not at the same point, you... What?
Yeah, it's cobblers. But anyway, some of my... more wilder conversations with my kids one of them is a biologist and the other is possessed of a good deal of common sense, as is the third. And you can see them sometimes, they're just looking at me and they can't believe such absolute rubbish is coming out of their very own mother's mouth. And I hear myself saying it and I'm like, oh, yep, should have thought about that harder. Yeah. But you kind of can't, in a way, until you let it out of your mouth. Or I can't.
Yeah. No, and God, I am learning so much, actually, by talking to people on Zoom.
Yeah.
Because it's a different medium. And it comes out in a different way. For example, we have an adoptive son who's in Cyprus with his family, and he had testicular cancer over Christmas, and we had the miracle and all that. Mm-hmm. And I sent him the Gabor Mate book because he's an atheist, and he wants to know more about what he can do to ensure it doesn't come back. And he's asking these questions, and he knows I'm into the wanky bollocks, but this was perfect. And we had a discussion last night on Zoom, which was really good for both of us, because I was talking to him about my childhood and he was talking about his childhood. And we could be really honest because we don't know the protagonists in the childhood. He doesn't know my mother very well, or my father's dead. Yeah. I knew his father's dead. I've never met his mother. And all that. So we were having this great conversation. And at the end of it, he said, can I ask you something? I went, yeah, sure. What do you think? Yeah. And he said, when I was ill and afraid, and when I was going to have the chemo, you were there for me the whole time. And then when I was better, you distanced yourself. And I missed you.
Oh.
I know. Ouch. And my heart just opened up because it made me realise that I still carry this thing of I'm not wanted unless I'm of use.
Oh.
And I was purposely not getting in touch with him, not to be, you know, that silly old woman who was such a help at the time, but is a pain in the arse now.
I do that to my kids.
Yes.
I'm right there for them if they need me, but I try, and it's awful, I try so hard not to be.
Get in their way.
Yeah.
But this boy, because he's not of my blood and not of my training, was able to say to me, as his mother number two, which he calls me, I'm having to learn how to be a mother. Mm. And it was just, oh my God, he wants me for me.
Yes, hooray!
Oh my God.
Of course he does, you're wonderful.
I know. You know, and here we are back in the vulnerability, because I'm crying as I tell you that, because that meant so much.
Yeah.
Once I realised, I immediately went into the, oh my God, I've done the wrong thing, I won't do anything. You know, but then I realised, no, he actually wants me in a one-to-one relationship.
Yeah.
And I said it would be lovely if we talked like this once a month. And he said, well, if you remember, a few years ago, we did agree to do that, but you didn't.
Oh, ouch.
You know, and I went, oh my God, Timmy, I didn't realise I was working to my pattern.
Ooh.
And now you've alerted me that I don't have to work to that pattern anymore. And God, this is where we get into these blocks of who we think we are.
Yeah. Well, more to the point of who we think we ought to be.
Yes.
Which is such bullshit, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't even know where mine came from because, you know, over my life, my mother was a person who, when I was at university, I pretty much definitely rang her at least once a week. To, you know, just have that sense of home.
Yes.
And then subsequent to that, I think it's pretty much the truth. It's not quite the whole truth.
Yeah.
To say that if I didn't phone my mother, I may never speak to her again. That's terribly, horribly unfair.
Yeah.
Because actually she phoned me on Saturday night.
Right.
But I remember one year just thinking, well, you know, telephone works both ways.
Yes.
And in April, I decided as my New Year's resolution, I'm not going to phone my mother. If she wants to speak to me, she can phone me.
Mm-hmm.
And in April, I buckled and phoned her because we hadn't spoken to each other. And so where in all that's everything did I get the idea that one's mother phoning one is a bad thing?
Yes.
And yet, I steadfastly refuse to phone my own children more than say, I mean, not that I've had too much in lockdown because they've been around. But typically, if they're in somewhere that's not here, I make myself not be in touch more than about once a fortnight because I don't want to be an overbearing mother.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, they might spend half of that fortnight thinking, my mother doesn't love me. She never rings.
Yes.
It's beastly.
I've tried this with my mum because she rarely rings me. She expects me to ring her.
Mm.
And she says, well, I don't want to ring you at a time which is inconvenient. I said, but I'm always ringing you at a time when it's inconvenient. And you just say, I can't talk to you now, dear.
Yeah.
So why can't you do me that? And we're actually getting a little bit better at it. But I think...
If the way we do something is the way we do everything, then somewhere fundamentally in us, and it must be in our culture, because, well, I'm just going to throw that out there and say I think it's in our culture because I didn't learn it from my mum, definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm reasonably confident that I didn't, you know, I can't identify anyone I could have learned that from other than just a general cultural inculcation is that your mum phoning you is a bad idea when you're a grown up.
Yeah.
And that...
So we don't phone them because we've...
No, but if the way we do something is the way we do everything and it's all about a bigger story,
yeah,
then that all boils down to our separation from our mother, the earth.
Yes.
And that we don't believe she phones us because we've forgotten how to listen. Mm-hmm. And we don't phone her because, well, because we've forgotten how to listen.
Yeah.
But that... If we did, if we felt more in touch with the earth and with each other, maybe we'd be so much more able to just phone up someone. I mean, you don't even need to phone them anymore, do you? No. Send them a text going, yeah, I'm thinking about you, I really love you. And for to have no attachment to the idea that that might be anything other than a lovely thing to receive.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got to send a message to a friend later today, and I meant to do it before we started talking on Zoom. Because I've been there for her during a crisis that she's had this last year, and it's alleviating itself somewhere. And I've sort of quietly removed myself.
Yeah, because you're not needed anymore.
Because, well, I'm also recouping for me, which is fair enough. I should have, all I needed to say was, I'm going down for a few days to be silent on my own, and I love you.
Mm.
Which I will do, but I'm... She sent me a message yesterday. It was only this morning I sort of clocked and thought, oh, she's thinking, why have I not been in touch?
Mm.
Because I hadn't realised until talking to Tim that maybe she would like me to be in touch as a fellow human being and a friend, not as somebody who's going to listen.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. And, you know, you and I are supposed to know. We call ourselves wise women. And
I'd just like to say I had no part in that statement.
Oh, but that was given by God.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no, the name came straight into my head the second the guy said, you should do a podcast. This was we'd done this story.
Oh, before. Yes, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah. And do you know what I'm going to do now? We're at 10,000. I'm going to email him and say thank you.
Ooh.
He's a top TV producer. Probably absolutely nothing comes from it, and it doesn't matter one way or the other because I've given up any need for that, thank God, nowadays. All these years of this illusion that I wanted to be famous. And it was all an illusion.
Mm.
Didn't make me happy. Yep. Nobody else wanted it of me. Made that quite clear.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes,
I'd very much like to not be famous. I spent much of my life trying to be invisible.
Yeah, I made a big mistake. I really pushed... Well, no, maybe it wasn't a big mistake. I really pissed a load of people off at the Women of the World Conference in... Exeter, you were talking about witches, you remember.
I remember.
I wanted to be in on your group.
Well, we were talking at the same time, weren't we?
Yes,
so
we
couldn't
were.
Go and listen to one another.
I was
speak.
Talking about, it was about being invisible. And it was a load of women moaning about how nobody looked at them and nobody saw them. And I said, no, it's not invisible, it's ignored. And actually, it's our responsibility to ensure that doesn't happen because we're conspiring in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can sit here and whinge all day or we can do something about it. And they were really pissed off with me. I don't think I put it quite as tactfully as I might have done, which says that I'm not invisible and I'm not ignored. Quite frequently I'm rejected and it's a lot simpler and nicer to be invisible or ignored than rejected.
Indeed.
And they all rejected me, apart from two of them. It was really funny. I got this long message on the Spirited page that, we must talk about that, mustn't we?
Yes, we must.
We're going to set up a page on Facebook for the two of us for this podcast,
mm-hmm.
which will have been my Spirited page, but we'll move. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, we're going to have a page on Facebook, which would be very nice. And she sent this great long message saying, I think you misjudged that, and if you wanted people to hear you, it would have been better to have done this, and this. And I very, as politely as I could, went back and said, what makes you think I wanted to be liked?
What was the response to that?
She didn't answer.
Right.
But I hadn't wanted to be liked. I wanted to go in and put out a message which pissed a lot of people off And I know I didn't do it as well as I could have done because it was the first time I'd had the courage to do that.
Yeah.
But I do remember once, there was a girl who was a nurse at a hospital in Birmingham, and I was asked to give a talk about spirituality generally. I can't remember what it was. And I talked about karma. And I was a lot less wise than I am now, and I'm not very wise now. But so I didn't necessarily do it very well. And this girl had been seriously abused as a child, sexually abused. And she was in a... Oh, anyway, it doesn't matter. But and she was outraged, absolutely outraged, and complained about me. I never got asked back.
Mm.
6 months later, my husband and I were doing a prosperity course in the Algarve, a week. She booked on it. She came. And she absolutely changed her mind. Wow. Because I had pissed her off so much and she was so angry. And somebody wise said to her, if you're that angry, there's something in there you've got to look at.
Yeah.
And she started studying, and I was actually privileged to be the witness of her first meeting with her father in 30 years. She ran away when she was 16, changed her name and everything, where she said, you are forgiven.
My goodness.
That's and she's moved on.
Hearted woman.
Yes. I love the fact that she actually said, you are forgiven. She didn't say, I forgive you, because she was still working with that. But yeah. She said, you are forgiven. Took it to the wider thing, you know, which is, I have given up this trauma. I don't need to have this trauma identify me anymore, but I need you to know that I know what you did.
Yeah.
And this woman here knows what you did, and you are forgiven. Don't you ever bloody do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're watching you. You know, but that was seminal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Extraordinary. And that was from my being tactless and stupid. Mm. And not knowing what to say tactfully. Yeah. Sometimes also, you piss people off.
Karma's a biggie, isn't it? Because if you believe in karma only existing through human lifetimes, which I don't know whether I do believe that at all, that each of us, if karma is just a wheel of cause and effect, we only do in this life what's appropriate to and within the remit, etc., and what seems right. So if we live in a, you know, for example, a society where absolutely everybody spits on frogs or something, we mean frogs no harm. We just spit on frogs because that's what you do. Mm. And then, you know, maybe you'll come back as a frog and, you know, great things will be learned by you about cultural inculcation or whatever, you know.
Mm.
But just the idea that the cause and effect is in some way conscious, and that anything that happens in this life that's other than
good,
I got rich, I was happy, you know, I had lots of sex and a great body type of thing. We can see my priorities, can't you? That's not quite true. Is bad and means we were bad. It's such cobblers.
It is cobblers.
Yeah.
I actually like the idea, two ideas. One is that all souls need to experience everything.
Yeah, me too.
So we have all been murderers and rapists. And I actually remember being a rapist.
Wow.
I watched the movie, I think it was Immortal Beloved, the uncut version, you don't see it on television. There's a scene where the Napoleonic soldiers rape a woman to death in a forest.
Oh my God.
And I was in the cinema and I was going, oh! And some part of me said, that was such fun.
Oh my Lord.
I don't know if it was me or a hitchhiker.
Leg-curdling, spine-chilling
moment, but that was revelatory for me. Because, you know, I was regarding myself as a relatively good woman to think I have been a rapist and I have murdered a woman, you know. But so I think actually we do experience it all. And it's not a question of judgment or anything. It's just part of the wider picture. Because if you haven't, as you said last time, if you haven't been through suffering, you can't empathise.
Mm.
You know, if you haven't got the whole range of experience, how can you know anything?
Yeah.
And even when you have got the whole range of experience, that was last week.
Yes! We still know shit all.
Something else. And I also do believe that there are souls. There's a little book, colour picture book, written by Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote the Conversations with God books, which were really useful to me in my search at the beginning, called The Little Soul and the Sun, which is about a child in heavens who's going to come down to reincarnate and wants to learn more about love, is really keen to learn more about love and makes a pact with another fellow soul that the other one will come down and hurt them so that they can learn about love. And this is in the service of the learning of love. And I also think there are souls that do come in as heavily disabled souls to teach us. Great souls. So I don't subscribe to the you've come back disabled because you were wicked in the previous life. No, that's hierarchical.
Yeah, totally. And just so ludicrously oversimplistic.
Yes.
And you know, I also have some questions about the idea that everything we're made up of is following us through lifetimes, and that therefore, because if matter can't be destroyed, it can only be recycled. Yes. There's a finite amount of matter on this planet. And so the matter that is the matter of me at this moment, at some point, could have been the finest piece of fetlock on the white hoof of a shire, in Roman Britain or something. And that therefore, that just that tiny thread might have a memory from then in it, which has got absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the personality, or even the kind of deep soul of Susie Crockford. Nothing, but I might still remember something from then. You know, I mean,
it's just feel attached to something.
Yeah, it's far more complicated than our very, very facile stories. Yes. If we don't really look into, you know, what is it? What does it mean? Why do people think what they think? What are people's experiences, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And also when the Kabbalistic teaching or the Jewish teaching is about the Pargod, the great tapestry of creation, every thread is relevant. Mm-hmm. And there's this idea of the Akashic record, which is the record of everything. And, well, two things. One is you can pick up something in the Akashic record and work with it in that lifetime, whether or not it had anything to do with you previously before. It's your choice to work with that aspect of the Akashic record. And also, in the heavens, there's no time, as we understand it. All already now.
Yeah, it's now.
Everything's now. Queen Elizabeth I is walking around now.
Yeah.
And we go in our rational linear minds, well, you know, it can't be because of the effect of I can't see her. And the Spanish Armada happened, and so happened, and this line of monarchy so setting all that. But just because it's all already happening now doesn't mean to say it isn't all real. We're just so linear, so rational.
Yeah.
And something I change my mind about now will affect my past or my memory of my past.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was another interesting piece of science, was that how many times you visit that memory and what you make that memory mean will completely change that memory.
Yes.
Never mind all the ways in which it might change your relationship with your present.
Yes.
It will actually change the memory.
And it will change the reality of that memory. I have a very clear recollection of a time when I found my childhood storybooks from what I wrote at school.
Yes.
And this was a time when I was working with the relationship of my mother, and it was difficult at that point. And I read those stories and I saw a child writing about an abusive mother.
Mm.
I read them again last night. They're not.
Really?
They're the same stories.
That's fascinating.
But my interpretation of them, because of the work I've done, is now different.
Whoa.
But the stories are still written exactly the same.
Yes, pen. Yes. Yeah.
But it's what you're looking for.
Yeah. Well, and it's the box you're looking at it
from.
Within, yes, from and in.
Yes, which brings us back to the Bible. You cannot read the Bible without A, understanding who they were and what their mindset was, and B, interpreting it for now.
Yeah, even though they were then and they are, in fact, now.
Yeah, we were.
Bitch.
This will be the one we get the complaint. Do you realise that she called Susie Crockford a bitch?
Oh,
we didn't say fuck for a year.
Oh, God.
My husband sometimes gets a little bit of a whoop from somebody when he talks about Sappho, one of the Beagles, as his blonde bitch. Oh, I've got this cute blonde bitch. You know, he has got a clue.
Cute blonde bitch.
Yeah,
totally accurate description.
Well, she's got him, actually.
Yeah. Wrapped around her little dewclaw.
Yeah.
Less than
are.
How are we off for time before we go?
We're on 34 minutes. So actually, yes.
Wow, 34 minutes is very short.
Isn't it?
It is.
But we all need to go and have a pee now, so.
Okay.
Including the listeners, probably. Actually, they're probably taking us into the bathroom.
Maybe.
Some of them are listening to us in the bath.
That's an intriguing and hilarious thought.
Yes. I used to have long phone calls with a friend of mine when we were both in the bath. And I told somebody else about it. They went, what, you're both naked? Don't you know you're both naked? No, we're friends. We're talking.
Yes.
The bloke in the bath and the woman in the bath say, what? We're relaxed. We're talking.
And you're not in the same bath.
That would be fun. No, we're not in the same bath.
That's hilarious.
Well, we are in the same bath, but we're doing different bodies. Enough. Thank you for listening. We'll be with you again next week. And this time there might be cake.
I think we can confidently predict cake.
I think we can predict cake. And if it's not too wet, we'll be standing outside with two microphones and cake.
Woohoo!
Can't wait.
Bye-bye.
Bye.